Hey, are you listening?
When you find yourself in danger, when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking, there is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call
OTR Rob, 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 Rob.
Ladies and gentlemen, as responsible parents, you never think of allowing your children to play with poison. And as responsible Americans, it's your duty to protect them from the dangers of the poison we call prejudice. Here in America, racial and religious hatred does exist, sustained by the political adventurers and plain crackpots who are willing to scrap the democratic way of life to attain their own ends. Prejudice in America is centered in their adult philosophy. But unless we guard ourselves and our families, it can find its way into our own lives. Then the poison would do its work, undermining America's unity, sabotaging our prestige abroad, and wrecking our ideal of individual freedom. In your family life, you can effectively carry on a campaign against prejudice. Our youngsters grow up with a pride in their country. Teach them that part of that pride is our tradition of accepting or rejecting people on their individual worth, not on the basis of race or religion or color. Remember, freedom and prejudice can't exist side by side. If you choose freedom, fight prejudice.
Hey everyone, this is OTR Rob welcoming you to The Adventures of Michael Chain, Private Detective. This episode is from June 18th, 1944. The episode is entitled An Investment in an Invention of an Invention, something like that. Kind of weird to have a story about someone inventing something and during the time of war when most resources were not readily available and most of the resources were going to the military. I would think it would be very difficult to invent anything during World War II years or any years where there's a national conflict going on and most of the resources going to the military. Anyway, enjoy this Michael Chain from June 18th, 1944, one of my favorite shows, and all the other shows that tag along with this one. Enjoy those and enjoy the rest of your week, and I'll see you back here next week.
The Adventures of Michael Chain, Private Detective. The people who make 76 gasoline and Triton motor oil, Union Oil Company, present The Adventures of Michael Chain, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis. Once, Mike Chain, San Francisco's favorite detective, is in his office high up in the Rust Building attending to business. Phyllis Knight, his easy-on-the-eyes assistant, is taking notes as their latest clients, inventor William Belsey and Miss Hess, try to explain the unexplainable.
Now, let me get this straight, Miss Hess. You have been visiting your aunt in New York?
Yes, for 6 months. I wired Daddy that I would arrive Wednesday, but I managed to get an earlier train and arrive Monday.
And the house was all in order when you came home Monday at 10 in the morning?
Yes, that's right. I expected Daddy for dinner, but, well, he didn't come home.
You didn't call his office and tell him you had arrived earlier than expected?
Oh, no. Daddy hated people in the family calling him at the office.
And you weren't particularly worried when he didn't come home at all that night?
Not particularly. Daddy often stayed at the club.
But you didn't call the club, hmm?
No.
So Monday night he didn't come home, all day Tuesday he didn't come home?
Nor Tuesday night, nor all day Wednesday.
So it was only because Mr. Belsey called you Wednesday night and said your father had an appointment with him and that your father hadn't showed up. It was for that reason only that you started to worry.
No, I wouldn't say that. I worried more and more as the time passed, but you must remember Daddy didn't expect me till Wednesday night.
And his appointment wasn't with me exactly. I was going to be there, naturally, but the appointment was with Mr. Hackett and Mr. Carter.
As I understand it, you had an invention which Mr. Hess was going to finance?
Actually, he did finance it. He advanced me the money I asked for. But I saw that my estimate was wrong, so I laid the cards on the table and gave Mr. Hess the chance to withdraw.
And instead of withdrawing from the venture, he invited Carter and Hackett in on it, hmm?
That's right. And I wanted them to think it over before they accepted the deal. It's pretty much of a gamble, you know.
And although Miss Hess maintains that her father hasn't been home since Monday, you saw him at lunchtime on Wednesday.
Well, just for a second. We just happened to be lunching at the same cafe.
You reminded him of the evening's appointment?
He reminded me.
So today you both decided to ask me to investigate.
Well, the idea was Mr. Belsey's. He insisted that we do something, so I called the police, but Mr. Belsey said that that wasn't enough, and so we came to you.
When did you notify the police?
About 11 this morning.
I'll get it. Mike Shane, private detective.
Hello, Phyllis.
Oh, hello, Inspector.
Is Miss Hess still in your office?
Why, yes, but how
on earth... Let me talk to her, Phil.
Sure, Inspector. It's for you, Miss Hess.
For me?
Yes, Inspector. Here, you talk to him.
Hello?
Miss Hess? Can you come over to Oakland right away?
Why, yes, I suppose so.
It's important, Miss Hess. It's about your father.
You mean you found him?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Afraid? Then something's happened to him?
Yes.
Oh, serious?
Very serious, Miss Hess. Your father is dead.
Dead? You say Daddy's dead?
Yes, Miss Hess, your father was murdered.
Hello, Mike.
Hello, Phil. Inspector.
Hello.
Thanks for bringing the young lady along. We won't keep you along, Miss Hess. Just a matter of identification. Of course, from the cards and his wallet and other bits of information, we're certain.
I understand.
All right, Sergeant.
Yes, sir.
Is that your father, Miss Hess?
Yes, Inspector. That's Daddy. Have you any idea as to who murdered him?
No, not so far. We'll want to question you later, of course, to find out, well, whether or not he had any enemies.
I'm ready to answer questions now. I'm not the hysterical type, Inspector.
So I gather.
Inspector.
Yes?
There's something different about Father. And not because...
Not because he's dead and been in the water?
No. I don't know what it is. Just different.
I see. Has the inspector asked about the possibility of your father's enemies?
He had none that I know of.
How much do you know about Mr. Belsey and the other partners in this deal, Miss Hess? Mr. Carter and Mr. Hackett?
Well, I don't know Mr. Belsey at all. I never spoke to him before he called up Wednesday night because Daddy hadn't kept his appointment.
You've known the others how long?
Ever since I was going to high school.
Hmm. What do you know about them?
Well, nothing except that they seem nice. Mr. Shane. Inspector.
Yes?
I know what it is that's different.
Oh?
Yes?
Daddy's coat, his overcoat, his umbrella, and his glasses are missing.
Well, under the circumstances, glasses and the umbrella being missing is not surprising. Of course, he might not have been wearing his overcoat.
Daddy always wore his overcoat. It was one of his distinguishing habits. He never went out without an overcoat.
Do you know how many coats he had?
Well, yes, he had three, unless he bought one while I was away.
Do you mind if we go to your house right now? We might find something there in the nature of a clue.
No, I have no objection.
Okay. Inspector?
Yes?
You take Miss Hess.
Fine.
Phyllis and I will take Belsey, and I think the sergeant ought to gather Carter and Hackett, too, don't you?
The sergeant already called headquarters and asked them to locate them for
us. Good, good. Then we'll all meet at your place on Pacific Heights. You say, Mr. Belsey, that everything was harmonious at the meeting between you, the murdered man, Hackett and Carter on Monday night?
Well, certainly. There was no reason for anything else. The meeting was held at Hackett's house. We were all agreed. I had the invention, they had the money, and they were willing to start right away. I just wanted them to think it over and take their time.
What happened after the meeting?
Why, nothing. It was cold, and I drove Mr. Hess over the Bay Bridge. He refused to let me drive him home, so I let him out at the Key System Depot, and he caught a taxi.
You say it was cold?
Yes, it was.
Tell me, was he wearing his overcoat?
Why, no.
Was he wearing his overcoat Wednesday when you saw him at lunch?
Yes, he was.
Mike, I guess this is the house, the one with the white porch. There's the inspector's car in front.
Oh, yes, sir.
Oh, there you are. Miss Hess is checking the closet for her father's overcoats. I said I'd show you into the living room. In this way. Hackett and Carter are on their way out, Mike.
Good, good.
Car just drove up outside. Two men getting out.
Oh, that's them.
Inspector, Daddy's dark blue overcoat's missing. Really? And so is his favorite umbrella, the one with the handle carved in the shape of an elephant.
Did you say umbrella, miss?
Yes, Sergeant.
With the handle shaped like an elephant?
That's right.
What is it, Sergeant?
Well, the headquarters just phoned. They found the umbrella and the overcoat with a pair of eyeglasses in the pocket.
Where'd they find them, Sergeant?
Washed up at the yacht club jetty in Sausalito.
What?
At Sausalito? Well, that's 10 miles from where we found the body. That's funny.
It's more than funny, Inspector. It's the first clue yet. The murderer's first mistake.
In just a moment, we'll return to Mike Shane and his adventures. Friends, your automobile engine gets dirty inside as well as out. As your engine operates, bits of carbon, particles of dirt, drops of water and gasoline are constantly accumulating in the crankcase. As these accumulations build up, they form a sludge which gums up valves, sticks to piston rings, and otherwise interferes with the smooth, easy operation of your engine. That's why Union Oil Company recommends flushing out your engine from time to time with Cleanse Oil, the special solvent action cleansing oil. Cleanse Oil is harmless to your motor, but it penetrates quickly to every working part, cutting sludge away swiftly and cleanly. Then, when the Cleanse Oil is drained out, the sludge flushes out with it, leaving your engine clean. And with a fresh supply of pure paraffin-based Triton motor oil, you're all set for hundreds of miles of clean, economical engine operation. Just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask the Minuteman for Union Oil Engine Flushing Service. Thank you. The murdered Mr. Hess's overcoat, umbrella, and glasses have been found. Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector are in the inspector's office at headquarters. The sergeant enters.
Here you are, sir. Coat, umbrella, and glasses. Oh, the glasses aren't broken.
Thanks, Sergeant.
Let me see them, Inspector. Ooh, wow.
What?
Pretty strong lenses.
Yeah, if he needed glasses like these, he couldn't go very far without them.
Yeah, that's just what I was thinking. This is the umbrella, hmm? Ray, you got a magnifying glass, Inspector?
Sure. Did you find something, Mike?
Question, maybe. Tell me, Sergeant, which pocket did you find the glasses in?
It's in the report, right-hand pocket.
I see. Inspector?
Yes, Mike?
Would you mind calling Miss Hess? Find out if her father was left-handed or not.
He was left-handed, Mike. She told me that when we were driving out to her home. I was asking about his habits and so on.
Uh-huh, I thought so. Here, you see the finger marks on the umbrella handle?
Mm-hmm.
They're on the left side of the handle. The thumbprint is on the right.
Mm. And the glasses were in the right-hand pocket of the overcoat.
Yes?
Report from Harbor Master says that prevailing currents would never wash umbrella and coat that distance.
Mm.
The Harbor Master says there's a strong eddy and they were probably thrown in the water only a few yards away at most.
Thanks.
Oh, it doesn't tell us much.
Mm.
Only that the murderer threw the coat and umbrella into the bay about 10 miles from where the crime was committed. It only goes to substantiate murder. We already know that.
Maybe we better have in Hackett and Carter.
Okay, Inspector.
Yes, Inspector.
Send in Hackett.
Yes, sir.
Any ideas, Mike?
Yeah. Same as you have.
Added together, they don't make much, do they? Sit down, Mr. Hackett.
Thanks.
Tell us, what do you know about this business?
I don't know anything about it.
You were in on the business discussions?
Certainly, but I hardly think they had anything to do with the murder.
Well, we have to start somewhere, you know.
Then why don't you start with some of the men that Hess quarreled with?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I happen to be one man with whom he never argued.
You're suggesting Mr. Carter?
You're supposed to be the detective.
But you're doing the hinting.
And Carter wasn't the only one who hated Hess.
Well, if Carter hated Hess, why did Hess invite Carter into the deal?
Hess didn't know that Carter hated him.
Well, you're not suggesting that Carter had anything to gain in this venture. That is, by Hess's death.
I'm not suggesting anything. It does seem to me, though, that many people had plenty of reason for killing Hess. Some men hated him. They could have killed him out of anger or revenge. Why look for some financial gain as a motive?
We're not.
As far as we can see, no one gained anything by Hess's death.
Except his daughter, who will inherit a pretty penny.
Again, are you suggesting that Miss Hess didn't get all the money she needed from her father?
She got all she needed, but not a cent more. Hess was tight. A nickel had to reproduce itself in 12 months, or else.
And you can't help us any more than that?
No.
I see. Well, ask Mr. Carter to step in on your way out. Thanks.
There's an unpleasant character.
Yes, but unnecessarily so.
He pretty well removes any doubts as to what we might think about money being the motive for murder.
Oh, I'm not buying that, Inspector. In its entirety, anyway.
Oh, but nobody has anything to gain by Hess's death.
Sit down, Mr. Carter.
Thank you.
Tell us, what do you know about this business?
I'm afraid I don't know anything about it.
You were in on the business discussions?
Oh, yes, but I doubt if they had anything to do with the murder.
Well, we have to start somewhere, you know.
Yes, I realize that, and I'd start if I had any ideas.
Mr. Carter, did you ever quarrel with Hess?
Quarrel with him? No, I have often disagreed with him, but I wouldn't call it quarreling.
Would you say he had many enemies?
Good land, no. He was very businesslike, very brusque. Not at all approachable, if you know what I mean.
A man of opinions?
Definitely. But he respected other men's opinions, too.
And the Monday night meeting was held at Mr. Hackett's house, hmm?
Yes, Hackett's was the most centrally located. Besides, neither Hess nor I like to conduct business at home, and Hackett doesn't mind.
You get along all right with Hackett?
Certainly, I understand him. His bark is worse than his bite.
Oh.
He's really a very nice fellow.
The last you saw of Hess was at Hackett's house, huh?
Yes.
You made no future appointments with him?
No, except the one for Wednesday night. Oh, wait.
Yes?
Come to think of it, I did say, as I was helping him on with his coat, that I might see him Tuesday at the club.
But you didn't?
No, because I didn't go to the club. I was detained on business over in Oakland.
I see, and you can't tell us anything more?
I'm sorry, no.
Thanks a lot, Mr. Carter. We'll call on you if we need you.
Well?
Not much help.
I disagreed.
What?
What?
He was a great help.
I can't see a suspect in the whole bunch.
No, nor can I. All we have is a murdered man.
You want me to prove that the murderer is one of the four?
Yes, but you can't.
One of them lied.
Which, Mike?
That I don't know, honey. If I did, we'd have the murderer. But that doesn't alter the fact that one of them lied.
Well, it is true that Hackett's description of Hess's character is very different from Carter's, but I'd hardly call that lying.
Oh, I'm not talking about that. Inspector.
Yes, Mike?
Ask the sergeant if Carter and Hackett have left the building yet.
Yes, Inspector.
Have Carter and Hackett left yet?
No, sir. They're standing talking to Miss Hess and Belsey.
Good. Tell them we've got a lead and that Mr. Shane would like to see Miss Hess at her home alone in about 30 minutes.
Did you get that, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
And see that they all hear it.
Yes, sir. Right away.
What's the idea, Mike?
The murderer has left plenty clues.
I don't know what they are, then.
The coat and the umbrella being found so far from the murder.
Yeah.
The eyeglasses in the right-hand pocket of the coat. Mm-hmm. A deliberate falsehood. One says Hess was wearing his coat. Another says he was not. One says Hess was argumentative. Another says he was not.
So what? They're clues, but they don't lead us to anywhere.
Right, Inspector, right. So we trap the killer.
Go on, I'm waiting.
The killer's clever, Inspector. Very, very clever. He's covered his tracks beautifully, yet...
Yeah, Mike?
Yet, like every other killer, he made mistakes. We have found some of these mistakes, but we don't know who made them. So we're pretending that we found a lead. The killer will worry.
And try to find out what we know, thereby making another mistake. One that will point the finger at him, huh?
Right, Angel, right. Now we'll go to the Hess place in my car. I'll drive, and you two keep out of sight. In the back, lie down on the floor. I've got to have the killer believe that I'm meeting Miss Hess alone and that there are no witnesses.
Look, Mike, I don't like that.
Why not?
Well, you're practically inviting the killer to take a pot shot at you, using yourself as bait.
Mike Shane, I didn't catch on at first. Well, you're not going to do any such thing.
Yes, I am. I'm going to catch the killer, and you can help or not. Now, come on, come on. Out the back way. I'll drive my car into the police garage, and that way no one will see you two getting into it.
What is it, Mr. Shane? Oh, I can hardly wait. What have you found?
Are you all alone?
Yes, except for the maid.
No phone calls?
No, not a thing. I just got here a few moments ago.
No one followed you?
Not that I know of.
Now, I'm going to look around the driveway here for a minute. Will you please go to the back door and let the inspector and Phyllis in the back way?
Yes, of course.
How about it? No soap, eh, Mike?
Apparently it didn't work.
Well, I'm just as glad. I can't see any profit in catching a murderer and losing my boss.
You expected the killer to follow you. Maybe shoot you because you said that you had found a lead.
Well, that was the idea, Miss Hess. But it didn't work.
Hello?
Inspector there?
Yes. It's for you, Inspector.
Yes?
Just got a report from the surgeon.
Yes, Sergeant.
The surgeon says Hess was killed Monday night or Tuesday morning. The body's been in the water at least that long.
We'll return to Mike and Phyllis in just a moment. Friends, just about everyone who drives a car knows that carbon is one of the prime evils of motoring. But what many people don't know is that the choice of a lubricating oil has a direct influence on the amount of carbon formed in their engine. Yes, that's right. Your selection of a lubricating oil determines the amount of carbon formed in your motor. That's because nearly all carbon comes from the lubricating oil and not from the gasoline, as so many people think. But lubricating oils differ widely in the amount of carbon they will form. For example, in a recent laboratory test made with the 7 leading motor oils sold here in the West, Triton motor oil contained 38% fewer carbon-forming elements than the next best oil, 86% less than the average. In other words, ladies and gentlemen, in addition to being a 100% pure paraffin-based lubricant, Triton motor oil gives you definite protection against carbon. That's because Triton motor oil is made by an exclusive propane solvent refining process, a process so valuable that it's been patented by Union Oil Company. You can buy Triton at all Union Oil Minuteman stations, wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76. Remember, Triton cuts down carbon. Mike's attempt at tricking the murderer into disclosing himself has failed. Now, Mike, Phyllis, and the inspector are walking into a well-known cafe on Geary Street.
Well, we'll soon find out whether or not that nice inventor, Velsey, was telling the truth.
My guess is that we will.
Really?
Why do you say that, Inspector?
If Velsey had killed Hess on Monday night, he wouldn't try to establish an alibi for himself by saying that he saw Hess in this cafe on Wednesday.
Why not?
You can't tell me that he's so dumb that he thinks we wouldn't check on it.
Well, we hadn't tried to check on it so far, and the only reason we are checking is because the autopsy surgeon says the body's been in the water since Monday.
We would have checked before the case was closed.
Perhaps, Inspector, perhaps. But supposing the body hadn't been found for weeks, then the autopsy surgeon couldn't have told the approximate time of death with such closeness.
Oh, that's true.
And the murderer probably figured on it being some time before the body was discovered. In fact, he came darn close to a perfect crime.
What do you mean, darn close? It is a perfect crime so far.
It won't be.
What?
Oh, I know. I laid one trap and it caught no fish, but we'll get him, Inspector.
Well, look, kids, here's the door. Now, who goes first, or do we discuss traps, fish, and Mike's failure standing on the sidewalk?
I'll lead, Phil.
All right.
There's the manager.
Yeah, I see him.
You wish a table for three, sir?
No, thanks. I'm from headquarters, and I want to ask a question.
Headquarters? Yes, sir.
Can you recall seeing a gentleman in here last Wednesday? He'd be wearing a dark blue overcoat, carrying an umbrella.
It's got a carved handle, carved like an elephant.
Yeah.
So, you do know about him?
Yeah, I even remember his name. It was Hess.
Why do you remember these details?
The gentleman was much disturbed.
Oh.
He don't want nothing we have on the menu.
Mm.
He used to get mad with the waiter.
But, how did you learn his name?
Well, while the waiter was getting his order.
Yes?
A young man come up to me and he said, did I hear Mr. Hess' voice a moment ago?
I see. Mm?
I said, I don't know.
Mm.
Who is this Mr. Hess?
Mm.
The young man said, He's always carry umbrella and he's wear glasses.
He did?
And I said, oh, yes, sure. He's in the third booth, but he's in a plenty bad mood. And the young man laughed and walked down to the booth. That's all I know.
Well, thanks a lot. Well, well, that about fixes an alibi for Mr. Belsey.
Yes, despite the autopsy surgeon's statement that Hess was killed Monday. No jury's going to convict a man who can produce witnesses who saw them both on Wednesday. Hey, wait a minute, wait a minute.
What, Mike?
No, don't rush him, Inspector. That's Mike's thinking look, and it produces results.
Honey, I believe I got it. Quick, back to headquarters and have all the suspects brought in. Any results, Inspector?
Yes, Mike. The boys examined the umbrella and found two different sets of fingerprints.
So the umbrella had been handled by someone else besides Hess.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's not conclusive by any means.
Why not?
A waiter or anybody could hand a man's umbrella to him, honey.
They're working on the coat now.
What about the eyeglasses?
I was holding that one back, Mike. There are two sets of fingerprints on the glasses,
and
too.
And the two sets on the glasses are the same as the two sets on the umbrella handle?
Yes, Mike.
Then we've got the murderer.
I think so. We have to do this in such a way that the inspector can obtain a conviction. Remember what I said about the jury.
Yeah.
Yes? Send him in.
Now remember, at the appropriate moment, I'll spring my story and you two watch like hawks.
All right, Mike.
Sit down, all of you, please. I'm going to ask all of you for your fingerprints. It's a messy business, but nothing to it.
Why, have you found something?
Yes, we have, Mr. Hackett.
Daddy's murderer.
Yes, Miss Hess. Now, folks, I'll bring you up to date. Mr. Hess was murdered Monday night.
Oh, wait a minute. I saw him Wednesday.
You're going to stick to that?
Well, certainly I'm going to stick to it.
Mr. Belsey, I'll give you one more chance to get yourself out of the jam you're putting yourself in by continuing to lie about seeing Mr. Hess on Wednesday.
But I tell you, I did.
I'll explain. It's a matter of ordinary police routine to look for the person who last saw the murdered man alive.
Well, yes, I know that.
The autopsy surgeon says Mr. Hess was murdered Monday. You're insisting on putting the rope around your own neck if you continue to claim that you saw him Wednesday.
But I did see him Wednesday, and the people in the cafe can prove it.
All right, Belsey. You asked for it. Miss Hess, gentlemen, here's how the murder was committed. Mr. Hess was hit over the head Monday night and his body thrown into the bay not far from the Key System Depot. The murderer kept Hess's coat, umbrella, and glasses.
Go on.
You catch on quickly, Mr. Carter. The murderer then waited till Wednesday, and wearing Mr. Hess's coat, eyeglasses, and carrying Mr. Hess's umbrella, he made a point of making himself known at the cafe. He then put the eyeglasses in the coat pocket, the right coat pocket, which was a mistake because Mr. Hess was left-handed, but he put the glasses in the right-hand pocket, and laying the coat and the umbrella on the chair, he then made himself known to the manager as himself, looking for Mr. Hess, whose voice he claimed to have heard.
Clever. Very clever.
Diabolical is the word, Mr. Hackett.
The murderer then carried the overcoat on his arm, hiding the umbrella, and later that night threw them into a different part of the bay.
But there are a few things that even soaking in the bay won't remove. Fingerprints. Right-hand fingerprints on the umbrella handle. Fingerprints on the eyeglasses. And, oh, yes, hairs on the inside of a coat collar.
Yes, Inspector.
Bring in the coat, Sergeant.
Yes, Inspector.
Actually, gentlemen, all we need is the confession. We have the evidence. The hairs on the collar, other than those of Hess, are the hairs of the murderer. And I know who the murderer is.
Here's the coat. The hairs are on the report card. Thanks, Sergeant. Well, is somebody going to confess, or do we have to take all your fingerprints and specimens of your hair?
Very well. I think we'll start with Mr. Belsey. That way we won't have to go any further.
Why, you're crazy. You can't hang this on me.
Okay, Sergeant, okay. He's going to be stubborn. But take good care of him, won't you? You'll find he's the killer, all right.
You know, I've been racking my brains all the way home, Mike, hoping I wouldn't have to ask this question.
Well, what is it, Angel?
Well, all the evidence, if you can call it evidence, could have applied to any one of the suspects.
Yes, Angel.
Was it a good guess, or were you dead sure that it was Belsey?
I was dead sure it was Belsey. Oh, I admit I guessed about his method of operation in the cafe, but it was close enough.
Well, I still don't know what single thing it was that pinned it on Belsie. That is, from your standpoint.
It wasn't a single thing, honey. It was two things.
All right then, Clam Shane, give.
Well, in the first place, Carter said that he had helped Hess on with his coat at Hackett's house on Monday night.
Yeah, that's why Carter was so excited in the inspector's office. He remembered that.
Correct. And Belsley lied about it. He said it was a cold night and that Hess didn't have his coat.
Ah, yes. And the second point?
Well, the second is obvious, my dear. Hess had advanced the money to Belsey. Now, if Belsey didn't go on with the invention, then Belsey was several thousand to the good.
Oh.
I doubt if Belsey's invention ever existed. The whole thing was a clever confidence trick with murder thrown in.
Well, I hope it teaches you a lesson, Mike Shane.
Why, Angel? Why me?
Oh, just the trouble hairs on a coat collar can get you into. They don't have to be blonde, either.
This is John Lang reminding you that June 30th is the deadline for the purchase of your federal auto use stamp. To help you safeguard this valuable tax stamp, your Union Oil Minuteman has on hand a supply of Handsome Deco Protectors. These decals fit right over the stamp on your windshield. They form a neat, clean shield against traffic film and keep the stamp from peeling off. To get your stamp cover, just drive in wherever you see the sign of the big orange and blue 76 and ask the Minuteman for a free tax stamp protector. He'll be glad to serve you. Tune in again next week at 8 o'clock for another adventure with Michael Shane, Private Detective, starring Wally Mayer and Kathy Lewis, with Joe Forte as the inspector. Tonight's story was written and produced by David Taylor and based on the character created by Brett Halliday. Music was composed and directed by Bernard Katz. This is John Lang saying goodnight for the people who make 76 Gasoline and Triton Motor Oil, Union Oil Company. This is the Mutual Don Lee Broadcasting System.
Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries. This is Ellery Queen with the case I call The Counterfeit Politician. Among the many assignments I've had over the years, one I really enjoy is documenting the truth of historical papers, particularly when there's money involved. In this case, the document was a memorandum written by the President of the United States to a deputy, stating that it was perfectly all right if his vice president were given the oath of office outside the United States. The examiner claimed it was a horrendous hoax, but I told him, it's worth a fortune. In a moment, I'll tell you why. In the case of the counterfeit politician, the memorandum offered for sale was real. The vice president in Franklin Pierce's administration actually took the oath of office in Cuba. Listen again to Ellery Queen's Minute Mysteries.
Program is transcribed. Ellery Queen. Of a safer American home, a happier American community, a more united state. The American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Ellery Queen.
I dedicate this program to the fight against crime. Not only crimes of violence and crimes of dishonesty, but also crimes of intolerance, discrimination, and bad citizenship. Crimes against America.
The American Broadcasting Company presents another case in the career of Ellery Queen, celebrated fighter of crime. As usual, Ellery invites you to match wits with him as he relates the mystery. And before revealing the solution, he gives you a chance to solve it. Tonight, Ellery's guest armchair detective, who will represent you home armchair detectives, is the popular Hollywood columnist, Miss Sheila Graham. And now, Ellery Queen, your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Paul Masterson. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard me investigate crimes in just about every imaginable place. Well, our crime tonight took place in the strangest locale of all, right on my own radio program. I call it... Paul.
Ellery, hold it, will you?
What's the matter, Paul? What is it?
Ellery, you can't do this. You'll have to switch. Give us another case.
Oh, why?
Murder on the Queen show? Are you crazy? You'll scare the bejinkers out of people, Ellery. They'll think it's actually happening in this studio during the broadcast.
Very good point, Paul. Yes, very good. Ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to be sure and keep in mind throughout the next half hour that you're listening to a case from the past, a crime that occurred a long time ago. Satisfied, Paul?
Thanks, Ellery.
It's a case I've always called the Armchair Detective. Veteran Queen fans will recall that in the early days of our radio show, as today, I invited some well-known person to come to the studio and sit in the guest detective's armchair. Then, as now, it was usually fun. But on the night I had in mind, things didn't quite go in the usual way. That night, about 15 minutes before we were scheduled to go on the air...
Everybody got the cuts?
I think so. Still, how are we on time?
We'll have to pick up 15 seconds, Ellery.
Oh, come
on, catch him, fill him back again.
All right, coming, Nick. Who is it tonight?
Dr. Monty McKing.
Who?
You know, the college professor who has his own radio show. McKing's English.
Oh. Correct English crusader.
That's right.
Better brush up my grammar. After you, Nicky.
Thanks. Bill?
Dr.
McKing, Ellery Queen in the body.
How do you do, sir?
I'm almost afraid to answer, Dr. McKing. I might hang a participle or something.
Darling.
Oh, Rosemary, I'm sorry. My dear, may I present Mr. Ellery Queen?
How do you do, Mr. McKing?
And this character is my brother and business manager, Bud McKing.
Oh, hello there.
I
think our paths have crossed in radio, Bud.
As a small business... Say, Ellery, seeing that we're pals, how about tipping Marty off tonight's solution?
Oh, huh? Sorry.
And
we are rebuffed.
Right. And, yes, sorry, Elsie. My secretary, Miss Woolen.
Woolen.
This is really a thrill, Mr. Queen. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Queen fan. Why isn't that nice,
Thank
Ellery?
You, Miss Woolen. Oh, Dr. McKim, we haven't too much time. Shall we go into the guest detective room?
Marty's to sit in a special room, Mr. Queen.
Right in here, Mrs. McKing.
Oh,
isn't it?
All right,
isn't it? You see, we try to duplicate a whole mattress. Oh, Nicky, would you pour me a glass of water, please? My throat.
You know, you can't see the broadcast in this room.
Oh, is that so?
You just hear it, as you would in your own home.
Program piped in here from the control room, Marty. You get it through that loud speaker.
Why, how interesting.
Oh, so I see, but... At the proper time, Mr. Queen, I take it I extemporize in that microphone above the table?
Yes, Doctor, yes. It's strictly an ad-lib spot. Immediately after my announcement on the air that I know who committed the crime, Nicky and I dash into this room from the studio, seat ourselves on the other side of the table from you, and then we hold a three-cornered post-mortem over the court.
Not Dr. McKing's corpse, I hope.
Elsie, do I detect an unconscious secretarial wish to achieve my destruction?
Marty, I don't find that a bit funny.
Don't come, Rosemary.
But Mrs. McKing, I didn't.
Oh,
right, Nicky, yes. I should explain, no one's allowed in this room but our guest of the evening. So, Nicky, if you'll show the rest of Dr. McKing's party into the client's booth.
Oh, certainly.
Now, if you get thirsty during the broadcast, Doctor, here's a pitcher of water right on the table.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Oh, Phil.
Yes, Ellery.
How about a quick level?
Whenever he's ready.
Uh-huh. All right, if you'll be seated, Dr. McKing.
Yes, thank
you. And say something into the mic, anything at all, just the voice level, sir. Dr. McKing alone in the armchair detective's room. We went on the air with our program, and in due course, I reached the point in our mystery where I was able to say...
But, Ellery, do you mean to say...
Yes, Dad. Now I know who committed the murder. Nicky and I hurried to the armchair detective's room as usual.
There was Dr. McKing, a little nervous, but otherwise himself. I said, into the table, Mike. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Now, let's see what our guest armchair detective has to say, Nikki.
And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our guest is the famous Dr. Monty McKing, founder and leading light of that popular radio program, McKing's English.
All I can think of at this moment, Dr. McKing, is McQueen's ignorance. You're too modest, Emery. You're not the worst offender by any means. Oh, you're sometimes guilty of ellipses.
Is that bad, Doctor?
But you usually avoid committing such truly foul crimes against our mother tongue as needless variants, irrelevant allusions, pleonasms, periphrasy.
Surrender!
But to get away from the English language and how not to use it, Dr. McKing, I hear you're famous in a different sphere altogether.
Yes. You're said to be able to whip up a mean bouillabaisse, Doctor.
Oh, yes, Nikki. I am an enthusiastic amateur chef.
Doesn't your wife resent it?
On the contrary, Nikki. Mrs. McKing is only too happy to leave the solution of our household's culinary mysteries to me.
Ah, talking about solving mysteries, Dr. McKing.
Oh, dear. I find that drought has suddenly attacked my vocal cords.
Simple, we'll irrigate them. Nikki, would you apply?
I'm way ahead of Ellery. Here you are, Dr. McKing. A nice, wet glass of water.
Spoiled. Thank you.
Now, as soon as you're through oiling your larynx, Doctor, suppose you tell us who committed the murder in the police commissioner's office.
Oh, what's the... don't let the water glass worry you, Doctor. Who committed the murder?
Ellery, he's...
You noticed to speak, eh, Dr. McKing? Well, it happens to the best of us. In just a moment, I'll give the solution to tonight's mystery, but first... Here it is.
The control room cut our armchair detective's room off the air that night just in time, as Nikki and I hurried around the table to Dr. McKing's chair.
He fell off his chair.
Doctor. Queen, I poisoned.
Poisoned?
By what, Dr. McKing?
What's that?
Search Rosemary.
Doctor?
Search Rosemary? That's his wife. Dr. McKing. Ellery, call a doctor.
For what, Nikki?
Ellery, what's going on in here? What's happened to your guest?
Hey. Dead, Phil.
Dead? But we're still on the air.
Nikki, the poison is in that glass of water McKing just drank.
Our water? From the pitcher?
Pitcher's loaded with it, too. Smell this, Phil.
Huh? Oh, what am I doing? Ellery, for the love of Mike, we're still on. You've got to finish the show. Solve the murder.
Yes, solve the murder. Phil, have this room guarded till we're off the air. Nikki?
Yes, Ellery?
Back to the mic.
I don't know how we got through the rest of the program. My mind's a blank on the whole thing. But the minute we went off the air that evening, Ellery hurried back to the guest room to solve a very different kind of murder. The murder of his own armchair detective.
No. I didn't, Inspector Queen. I didn't, I tell you.
Mrs. McKing, your husband's dying words would assert you.
Well, you didn't find anything on me, did you?
The idea of murder's ridiculous. Queen, my brother probably committed suicide.
Impossible, Bud. The poison that killed him comes only in liquid form, so it must have been in the container.
And there's no poison container of any kind, either on Dr. McKing's body or in this room.
Inspector.
Billy.
I found it.
Ah.
The bottle's empty, Inspector, but smell it.
This is it, all right.
Sergeant, where'd you find that bottle?
On the floor of that glass-closed booth where Mrs. McKing, Bud McKing, and Miss Woolen watched the broadcast, Maestro.
The client's booth?
Oh, Nikki, feeling better?
Oh, yes, Ellery. Well, no one else was in that booth, Inspector, just his wife, his brother, and his secretary.
Well, it simplifies it. Ellery, you sure the water in this pitcher was okay when the McKing party first came in here with you and Nikki?
Before we went in the air? Positive, Dad.
Oh, Inspector, Ellery drank a glass full of it himself.
So one of these three dropped the poison into the pitcher before Miss Porter escorted him out.
Disposed of the empty bottle in the booth.
I'm afraid we forced the poisoner's hand, Nikki, by sending him into that booth.
Mrs. McKing, it looked as if your husband had noticed you fooling around with that pitcher.
If Marty had seen me drop poison into the water, would he have drunk any of it?
Rosemary's got a point there, Inspector.
He probably didn't get the significance of what he'd seen until he realized he was poisoned. But when he does realize it, he says to search you for the bottle.
But why should I murder Marty? I loved my husband. I loved him dearly. Life won't be the same. I'll say it won't.
Miss Woolen, what did you say?
Oh, nothing. nothing.
What did you mean, Miss Waller?
Yes, go on, Elsie. Say it. All right, I will. Dr. McKing was the kindest husband in the world to her. And all she cared about was money. Money for clothes, furs, and jewelry. And when he had to close down her charge account, she poisoned him.
Out of revenge, huh, Miss Waller?
No, for his estate. His will leaves everything to her. That's why Mrs. McKing poisoned him. For his money.
Well, Mrs. McKing?
What can I say, Mr. Queen, that I'm innocent? I've already told you that a dozen times. True, I've been extravagant, and I was angry when Monty clamped down on me, but commit murder for money? The man I loved?
Henry, come out with me a minute.
Oh, yes, Dad.
Shut the door. Well, shut it.
It's shut, Dad.
Oh. Well, these blamed radio doors. What do you think, son?
I don't know.
King did put the finger on his wife.
Well, it may have been no more than a stab in the dark, Dad. Certainly not enough to hold her on.
I think I'll send her home. Have Beely gumshoe the house on the QT. Might send Nicky home with her, too.
Good idea, Dad.
She could snoop out information where they wouldn't give us the time of day.
Blasted.
Sure, but what?
Well, Dad, ever since McKing said search Rosemary, I've had the weirdest feeling that...
That she meant something else?
I don't know. I had the feeling there's a clue. A clue I've missed or forgotten. A clue that ties in with McKing's dying words. Maybe something that happened during the...
Of course. You got it?
No, Dad. No, but I know where I can get it.
Talk sense, son.
Well, they always make recordings. The Queen shows that. Now, you go ahead with your plans. I'm going to take a recording of tonight's show home and play it back. All night, if necessary. To spot that... whatever it is.
Bring that drought has suddenly attacked my vocal cords.
Simple, we'll irrigate them, Nicky. Will you oblige?
I'm way ahead of you, Ellery. Here you are, Dr. McKing, a nice wet glass of water.
Spoiled. Thank you.
Oh, it's here somewhere.
Modest, Ellery. You're not the worst offender by any means. Oh, you're sometimes guilty of a litany.
Oh, it can't be there.
Variants, irrelevant allusions, pleonasm.
Said to be able to whip up a mean bouillabaisse, Doctor.
Oh, yes, Nicky. I am an enthusiastic amateur chef.
Doesn't your wife...
Wait a minute, chef.
On the contrary, Nicky.
Chef.
Mrs. McKean.
Chef. Can it be that...
Amateur chef.
Doesn't your wife...
That's it.
After we got Rosemary to bed.
Oh, I went home, but then I thought, with Monty, well, Rosemary in such a spot. May I come in and chin for a while?
I'm sorry. It's after 3. What do you want?
Scared to death, huh?
Good night.
Oh, what's your hurry?
Your foot, Mr. McKean.
You're full of that murder op, too, aren't you? And she made you afraid of me.
Please take your foot away. I want to go to bed.
Don't think Gallery's pulling the wool over my eyes. You're a spy. He planted you here.
Let go of the door.
Monty wasn't murdered. It was suicide.
You've been drinking. Get out.
I know what you think, that I'm in love with Rosemary, that I killed my brother to get his wife.
If you don't go
Let
away.
Go. I... There's never been a thing between Rosemary and me. Not a thing.
Sergeant, you still down there?
Oh, Miss Waller, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing, Sergeant. I just want to make sure you were there.
Well, everything okay up there, Miss B?
Well, yes. I tucked Rosemary McKing into Betty by at 10:30, and Miss Woolen went to her room hours ago.
Well, you sound shaky. Are you sure everything's all right?
Well, Sergeant, Bud McKing just came back to the house.
I know. I saw him go in. But trying to sneak in, so maybe I'd better come in at that.
What was that? Oh, heavens,
what's wrong now, Sergeant?
Don't you hear it, Sergeant? Sounds like someone was breaking up the house. I better go see what's
going on. No, wait till I...
Downstairs.
Was an amateur chef, an enthusiastic cook. This ought to be the spice cabinet.
Spice cabinet.
Got that cracker in the head anyway.
Old cloves, thyme, mace, marjoram, sage, basil, nutmeg, cold ginger.
Ah, look. Rosemary.
Huh?
Rosemary. An herb used in cooking.
When he said search rosemary, he meant to finish a sentence.
Or search rosemary jar in spice cabinet or something like that.
Search rosemary jar? Well, search it.
I'm right, there'll be something in this jar, unless the searcher beat us to it.
He missed it. There is.
A wad of typewriter paper.
Letters the king left there. What's it say, Ellery?
Dated 10 days ago. Due to a recent disturbing episode, I am writing this note as a precaution. If anyone finds it, I am the only one who uses the spice cabinet, so it is safe against accidental discovery. It will be because they are investigating my murder. The other night, a certain person close to me threatened my life. I was inclined to at first dismiss it as hysteria. Now I am not so sure. If anything happens to me, the person who threatened to kill me was...
Who, Ellery?
Come on, Maestro.
It's Elsie Woolen, my secretary. Signed, Monty McKing.
Billy, get that Woolen girl down here. And it is true, Miss Lyon.
Yes, but
you did threaten Dr. McCain's life.
Give her some of the old Porter treatment, you know, the kind you use on me.
I hope I have better luck with her. Miss Woolen. Elsie.
Oh, Miss Porter, they just don't understand.
Yes, well, they're men, dear. But, Elsie, they'll find out eventually. It's much better to tell the truth. They're really not ogres. You can't blame them, dear. If you refuse to talk, it looks as if you have something to conceal. Why not tell the whole story? Come on now.
I loved him.
Secretary loves both.
Vicky, shut up.
I kept it locked up for so long. But one night it came out. Monty told me he loved his wife. I guess I said some foolish things. But I didn't poison him last night. I didn't. You can't prove I did because I didn't. Try to prove it. Go ahead, try.
Hey, all right, Feely. She's not going anywhere. Because she's right. We can't prove it. All this does is to uncover another possible motive.
This is a toughie.
This would be about the time for the great Ellery Queen to come up with one of his miraculous solutions, wouldn't it?
Why, Nicky, how did you know?
Oh, no.
Ellery.
Yes, Dad. Now I know who murdered Dr. McKing. Gentlemen, you have the mystery. Now, suppose you home armchair detectives and our guest in the studio compare solutions. Nikki?
Ellery, I'm happy to introduce the charming proprietress of one of Hollywood's most popular syndicated columns, Miss Sheila Graham.
Good evening, Miss Graham, and welcome to the armchair.
Thank you, but after listening to your mystery tonight, I'm a little worried about occupying this post.
Oh, you have nothing to be afraid of. Perhaps you'd like a glass of water to help you relax.
Heavens, no! That's the last thing in the world I'd want.
I can't say that I blame you. But now suppose we get down to business. Tell me, who do you think is the criminal in tonight's story?
Well, it's very complicated tonight.
Oh, sure.
But I think Miss Woolen, the secretary, did it.
I see. And your
reason? It was a very subtle murder. Mm-hmm. It takes a smart girl to murder a man like that and took a lot of preparation. Secretaries are usually rather smart, and she knew this man.
And
she knew that he might get thirsty. He obviously got thirsty very often in his office. And also, he said that somebody very hysterically threatened his life previously.
You mean in the note he left?
Yes, in the note he left. Mm-hmm. And she was a very hysterical woman, so I think Miss Woolen did it.
Thank you very much, Miss Sheila Graham. We'll find out in just a moment if your solution is correct. Now, here is Paul Masterson.
A second great war has in the not-too-distant past drawn to a close. The magnificent, self-sacrificing work of the International Red Cross will long be remembered. At home, the American Red Cross has always been on the job whenever disaster struck, whether it was a tornado, earthquake, fire, or flood. It is our duty and our privilege to help make the 1948 Red Cross campaign the best ever. The quota is set at $75 million. By giving to the Red Cross, you are giving directly to your relatives and friends in the armed forces and here at home. Let's make 1948 the banner year in donations to the American Red Cross.
I don't care. I don't want to hear it. He's just too smart. Always knows the answer to mysteries.
Well, I want to hear it.
Mickey, pipe down. What have you got, Ellery?
Swelled head.
It's all right, Dad. It's that crack in the skull. Well, now, what was Dr. Monty McKing's profession? What was he most famous for?
His radio program.
McKing's English.
His authority on the correct usage of the English language.
Then let's take another look at that note we just found in the rosemary jar. I quote, "Due to a recent disturbing episode, I am writing," and so forth.
Something wrong there, Maestro?
Sergeant, due to in that sentence is hopelessly incorrect.
Oh, it is, huh?
It should read, because of a recent disturbance. I'm writing so forth. Due to can never be used adverbially.
Is that so?
And this, If anyone finds it, it'll be because they are investigating my murder.
Anyone must be followed by he. One can't possibly mean the plural.
Oh, Miss Porter is with us again. Yes, Nicky. Another mistake. And this. I was inclined to at first dismiss...
A split infinitive.
A split in what? In other words, this short note, purportedly from the pen of an authority on correct English, reveals not one, not two, but three of the commonest errors of usage. Incredible. Conclusion, Dr. McKing did not write the note.
It's a phony. A forgery.
And since the note was not written by Dr. McKing, it was not left in the rosemary jar by Dr. McKing either. Someone else left the note in the jar, obviously the real writer of the note, the forger.
But Hillary, why? What was accomplished by it?
Well, a great deal, Dad. It made us believe that the word rosemary in Dr. McKing's dying statement, "Search Rosemary," meant rosemary the herb rather than rosemary the name of a woman. And who gains by our thinking that the victim was not accusing a woman named Rosemary, but was merely telling us to look for a note in a spice jar?
Only Rosemary McKing herself. She did poison her husband.
Tried to twist his accusation of her to mean something entirely different, because she had a guilty conscience.
So tonight, after I put her to bed, she forged her husband's signature to a note accusing Elsie Woolen, then sneaked downstairs, left the note in the rosemary jar as a blind...
And then Nicky deliberately led us to that jar.
Hey, wait a minute. Led us to the jar, Maestro?
Well, by wrecking the kitchen, Sergeant. What was that but a clever device to draw our attention to it? To make us search it and find her plant in the rosemary jar.
And then on her way back upstairs, she bumped into me in the dark and let me have it.
At that, Rosemary's attempt to lead us down a false trail might have succeeded, if only she'd learned from her victim the rules governing the English language.
Well, here's where she learned something about the rules governing murder. Billy, old Rosemary McKing,
for the murder of my armchair detective.
Yes, sir.
And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. Thank you again, Miss Sheila Graham, for serving as our guest armchair detective this evening. As mementos of the occasion, I have for you a copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Queen's Awards, 1947, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Ah, Paul. Feeling all right?
Well, I guess we're okay. There have been no calls yet asking if our armchair detective's really been knocked off.
And what are you worried about?
Among other things, Ellery, next week.
Never mind about next week.
What's the matter, Nicky? What gives next week that it darkens the fair brow and brings lightning into those beauteous orbs?
Why, Paul.
Well, it's nothing, Nicky. I guess you bring out the poet in me.
Paul.
Nicky.
Remember me?
Go away. Not you, Nicky.
Yes, I remember you, Ellery Q. I remember that female, too.
What female?
Nicky's referring to next week's problem, Paul.
I'll say she was a problem.
What was her... its name, Ellery.
Well, you were right the first time, Paul. I call her... it. The Farmer's Daughter. Ellery Queen saying goodnight until next week and enlisting all Americans every night and every day in the fight against bad citizenship, bigotry, and discrimination, the crimes which are weakening America.
All names used on this program are fictitious and do not refer to real people, either living or dead. Among the members of tonight's cast were Larry Dobkin, Herb Butterfield, Kay Brinker, Alan Reed, Joan Banks, Bill Johnston, Charles Seal, Ann Morrison, and Joe Kearns. Music was by Rex Corey, direction by Dick Woolen, entire production under the supervision of Ellery Queen. Now, a listening reminder. For a hilarious combination of spring fever and spring house cleaning, listen when Willie Piper's spring fever combats his wife's feverish energy on Tales of Willie Piper tonight. The preceding program came to you by transcription. The best time to plan for the future of your children is when they're small. That's the time to set up a nest egg for their education. And your banker will tell you that the best way to do it is to put the money... the Colgate Palmolive Peat Company, makers of Halo Shampoo to glorify your hair, and Colgate Tooth Powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle, bring you Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Alice Frost and Joseph Curtin. People like Pam and Jerry North enjoy living in New York because there's always something going on, at any hour of the day or night. But if there's one time when the big city sleeps, or even dozes off for a moment, it's in the wee hour just before dawn, when the streets are deserted, and your car is just broken down on the outskirts of town. Oh, it's no use, dear. This thing wouldn't start if I gave it a dose of Benzedrine.
I wish you'd stop turning the motor over. I'm beginning to feel like a malted nip.
Must be the distributor. Or that float in the carburetor.
Oh, no, it's the starter, Jerry. It keeps spinning around and around as if all the ice cream weren't melted.
What ice cream?
Well, I hadn't thought about the flavor. I suppose it's chocolate.
In the carburetor?
Oh, is that what you call those things?
What thing?
Those aluminum containers they mix maltas in.
Darling, I'm talking about starting the car.
Well, for goodness sake, what do you think I'm talking about?
I don't know, dear. You haven't given me a clue.
Jerry, where are you going?
Well, we can't just sit here, Pam. I've got to find a garage or a telephone or somebody that'll give us a hitch to one. Everybody around here seems to be asleep.
Oh, there must be some sign of life. Other people drive home from late parties, don't they?
Not along this road. There doesn't seem to be a single... Ah, a milk wagon.
What are you so happy about? We don't want any milk.
Hey there, hold up a second, will you?
Oh, Nellie. What's the trouble, mister? Run out of gas?
Run out of engine, I think. Do you know where I can find a garage that's open at this time of the night?
Well, now, I don't know as I can. I don't have much use for garages, you know. Not while there's good horses around. Now, you stop laughing, Nellie. You break down, too, once in a while.
What's the matter, Jerry? Won't he help us?
Oh, I'll help you, ma'am, soon as I finish up my milk route. Nellie won't mind taking you to a garage, so long as you don't make her go in. The smell of gas gives her colic.
I guess she doesn't even like to talk about it.
She don't mind.
Well, how long do you think it'll take you to finish?
Oh, it won't be long. I haven't got but a few more calls to make. Now, you just sit here in the wagon and wait for me. I'll be back in a minute.
Do you think we ought to, Jerry?
Wait in the wagon? Why not?
Well, I don't know. It seems kind of funny to be sitting in a milk wagon. I don't know a thing about cows.
I don't either, dear, but I just as soon get home tonight. Come on.
Okay. Oh, must be awfully lonely being a milkman, leaving bottles at people's doors, sitting up here in the driver's seat. You never see anybody face to face, not even the horse.
Pam, will you please sit down and leave Nellie out of this? The first thing you know, I'll have to...
You have to what?
Stay where you are. Don't make a sound.
Why, Jerry...
Shut up, I tell you.
Jerry North, how dare you talk to me like that?
I'm not talking, Pam. It's this manly-looking gentleman who's just stepped up to the wagon.
Well, what is it?
The one on your left with the scar on his face.
And the long-nosed gun in his hand.
Oh, how do you do?
Keep your trap shut or you'll get hurt. Where's the milk?
Matt Wells... What milk?
Come on, come on. Where are the cases that were piled up and back?
I don't know. We're strangers here.
Well, push over and let me look inside.
Yes, sir.
Oh, is that all the milk there is? Just these four bottles?
As far as we know, we haven't touched a drop.
No. We're coffee drinkers.
Shut up. I ain't got time for polite conversation.
Hey, what are you doing? That's somebody's milk.
Mind your own business.
Oh, you can't do that. Think of all the trouble the cows went to.
Sit down and keep out of the way.
Jerry, he's milk mad. He'll break all the bottles and we'll get the blame for it.
Well, that's that.
There's some cream over here in the corner.
Never mind. Where's the milk route?
The what?
The list of places the milkman delivers to. It ought to be hanging up here somewhere.
Oh, is this it?
That's what I want.
Hey, now, wait a minute. You can't get away with this.
No? What are you going to do?
Pay for the milk.
That's more like it. And just to make sure you don't get in my hair, I'm going to send you two on a little buggy ride.
Buggy? Here, don't you dare take those reins.
You'll get them back in a minute, lady.
Jerry.
Yeah, Rossi, give him a good ride.
Hey, don't do that.
Go.
Jerry, stop him. That bug's running away.
Never mind him, Pam. The horse is, too.
Atta girl, Nellie. Just take it easy and we'll find your master for you.
Maybe it'd be better not to, after running away with his horse.
The horse ran away with us, dear. And if she hadn't tired on that long hill, we'd have been in Cleveland by now.
Oh, golly, she's starting again.
Now, don't excite her, Pam. She just sees her master.
Where?
Waiting right over there on the curb next to our car.
Oh.
Whoa, Nellie, easy, girl. This is the end of the line.
You'd better start talking, Jerry, before the milkman turns sour.
A fine thing. If you want to go for a ride, why don't you find a merry-go-round?
We can explain everything, driver.
Well, you can't explain overheating this horse. She ain't air-cooled, you know.
Well?
Gosh almighty, you broke my milk, too. Now, Mrs. Snyder won't be able to take her bath.
But it wasn't our fault, driver. That horrible man had a scar on his face and a gun in our ribs. Otherwise, the horse wouldn't have run away. Don't you see?
I see, all right. But I don't think I'm hearing so good.
He broke the bottles, the thug. And he took the milk route, too.
Now, why would anybody want to break milk bottles?
That's just it. We don't know. Unless he sells cardboard containers.
It's a lot more serious than that, Pam. That guy was desperate.
I don't believe the whole story.
Stick him up.
Huh?
Stick him up, all of you. You'll get shot.
Jerry, it's a girl.
Now, what kind of a joke?
Shut up. Hand over all the milk you got. Come on, lady, pass it down.
But there isn't any more. Will cream do? We have some very thin cream.
Don't be funny. Give me the cream.
Yes, ma'am.
That all there is? Just these two?
That's all, lady. Mrs. Foley and Mrs. Rosenblum.
Oh.
Gosh sakes, that's not just cream. That's extra heavy.
What happened to all the milk?
The man with the scar got it. He got the milk route, too.
Man with the scar?
That's what they tell me.
Get in, driver.
How's that?
Get in, I said. We're all going for a little ride.
Another one? My horse is exhausted.
Do like I tell you. You're going to take me back over your milk route.
Why did he do it? Why did it have to happen to me? Every bottle along the route has been broken.
I'll stop your whining and keep driving.
There's Mrs. Henderson.
There must be milk insurance.
There's Mrs. Flowers, both ports.
There's rain insurance.
They'll never forgive me. I'll have to move to a new neighborhood.
Oh, there's one that isn't broken.
Where?
I see it. Mrs. Breedham's house. Oh, Nellie. Oh.
Take it easy now. No tricks or I'll let you have it.
We may get out, may we not?
One at a time. Keep in front of me. All of you.
Come on, Pam. Watch your step, dear.
How can I? With a hot gun breathing down my neck.
Go ahead, milkman. Stay with him.
I'm staying. Only I wish you would...
Keep moving.
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Not too fast now. Keep in line.
Anything you say. Go ahead, Jerry. I just can't understand why all the other milk bottles are broken and this one is still whole.
Wait a minute. I think I understand it now, Pam.
What is it?
A man lying across the steps. A dead man.
Oh, no.
How do you know he's dead?
He's been shot through the head.
Jerry, that thug did it. The man with the scar on his face, he killed him.
No, Pam. That thug didn't kill this man.
Why not?
Because this man is the one with the scar on his face.
Well, this is one situation where there's more to cry over than spilled milk.
Halo, everybody, halo. Halo is the shampoo that glorifies your hair. So halo, everybody, halo.
Use Halo shampoo if you want naturally bright and beautiful hair. Remember, even finest soaps and soap shampoos hide the natural luster of your hair with dulling soap film. But Halo contains no soap, therefore cannot leave dulling soap film. The first time you use Halo, your hair glistens in all its natural brilliance. The natural color and luster shines through like sunshine through a clean window pane. And remember, even in hardest water, Halo makes oceans of rich, fragrant lather. Halo quickly carries away loose dandruff and grease, needs no lemon or vinegar rinse, because Halo leaves no dulling soap film, nothing to hide your hair's natural beauty. Say hello to Halo and goodbye to dulling soap film. Use Halo on your children's hair, too. Get Halo shampoo at any cosmetic counter. Remember, Halo glorifies your hair.
So Halo, everybody, Halo. Halo shampoo, Halo.
Now, back to Mr. and Mrs. North.
stand there, Jerry. Get the police.
I'd be very happy to, dear, but I doubt if this young lady with the gun will let me.
I will in a minute, mister. As soon as I search this guy's pockets.
Oh, don't do that. It's against the law to move a dead man.
Against the law to do a lot of things.
I'll bet you've done them all.
Shut up. All I wanted from you was milk.
Just the same, you're going to get into a lot of trouble if you don't stop throwing suspicion on yourself. You're mixed up in a murder case, young lady.
No, I'm not. I'm just looking for a ring.
What kind of a ring? Is that what he was looking for?
That's my business.
It'll be the police's business, too, when they catch up with you. Don't forget you've got three witnesses here who can identify you.
Cut it out, will you? I didn't kill this guy.
But you do know who he is.
He's a skunk, a no-good double-crossing skunk.
Oh, I take it you're in love with him.
I was until he tried to run out on me, just swiping somebody's ring. A dirty rat, he said the cops were chasing him down the street. He had to get rid of it.
So he just left it in my milk wagon?
That's what he told me. Said he cut through the cap of a milk bottle and dropped it inside so he could pick it up later.
Only the wagon had moved by then.
I guess so.
Well, if he was double-crossing you, why don't you put that gun down and let the police take over?
Because I don't want to get blamed for stealing that ring. I want to put it back before she finds out it was stolen.
Who is she?
The woman I work for. She'll think I took it because I'm a maid.
Well, who's the woman you work for?
I've told you too much already. Now, turn around, all of you.
What's the idea?
Turn around, I said. Keep facing the street. If anybody tries to follow me, I'll shoot. Stay that way, all of you.
See which way she's going, Jerry.
No, and I'm not going to look either. She's too nervous to be tempted with that gun.
I'll see.
But we should have found out who she works for. The woman who owns the ring is the key to the whole case. We don't even know who she is.
I know who owns the ring.
Who?
Mrs. W.W. Stewart. Says so on the inscription.
What inscription? What are you talking about?
The ring that was in the milk bottle.
You mean you've seen that ring?
Seen it. I've got it. I found it while you was out gallivanting with my horse. It's right here in my pocket.
Homicide, Sergeant Mullins speaking.
Mullins, this is Mrs. North.
Oh, so early in the morning, Mrs. North? Don't tell me you're going to start finding corpses at the break of day.
Well, we found this one, Mullins. There may be more later.
You mean there's one already? A bona fide murder?
As far as we're concerned, it is, but we'll leave it to you to make it official.
Well, I'd better get right up there.
That's why I'm calling you, Mullins. Jerry and I are going to take the diamond ring over to Mrs. Stewart's place, but you'll find the body on Hewlett Street, about 6 feet from Mrs. Breeden's milk bottle.
What?
Oh, you can't miss it, Mullins. It's homogenized, and the milkman will be waiting there for you with a gray horse.
We must have a bad connection. Nothing but gibberish is coming out this end.
Well, it's going in clear enough. The corpse is on Hewlett Street, 722.
I got you.
A milkman is waiting there for you to tell you about the murder.
I got you.
And Jerry and I have to dash over with a ring because that maid of hers might kill somebody.
I lost you.
W.W. Stewart is certainly taking her time about answering the doorbell, Jerry.
Well, it's only 8 o'clock, dear. She might still be asleep.
Yes?
Mrs. Stewart? Mrs. W.W. Stewart?
Yes.
I believe you own a diamond ring with a large stone in the center and a circle of emeralds around it.
Why, who are you? What do you know about the ring?
Well, we don't know very much, except that it was stolen last night.
Stolen? From this apartment?
Oh, don't be alarmed, Mrs. Stewart. The ring isn't missing anymore, but if you want it back, we'll all have to go to the police.
No,
and...
no, I don't want any fuss about that ring.
But there is a fuss.
There will be if we stand here talking about it.
Well, what shall we do? Make signs?
No, please, go away, will you? Don't you understand? My husband is a very jealous man. I can't stand here any longer. I really...
Who is it, dear?
Oh, just some people from down the hall, Ed. Please, will you go away and come back some other time?
Mrs. Stewart, you don't seem to realize there's been a murder.
I can't help it. There'll be another one if you get my husband involved in this.
But what about your maid,
Goodbye.
Well, that was a cordial little reception. Another minute and she'd have served tea right in our faces.
Very strange, Jerry. Didn't seem as if she were at all interested in getting her ring back. Or the murder either.
Seeming isn't believing, dear.
She didn't even see the scene.
Well, before we go off the deep end on this, I think you better run down to the drugstore on the corner and phone the police again. I may need Mullen's strong right arm before I'm through here.
Well, what are you going to do?
Find out a little more about this ring.
Alone?
I won't be alone long, Pam, if you hurry that call. A squad car can be here in 3 minutes.
All right, Jerry. I'll be right back.
Thank you, dear.
And don't keep telling me I can trust you, because I can't. You lie like a trooper.
I don't.
Don't argue with me. I've got to get to work.
Excuse me.
Yeah? What are you doing here? What do you want?
Why, nothing. I was just...
Don't hand me that. You were just about to ring the bell. You're one of her friends, aren't you?
No.
As soon as I tell her I'm going to Chicago, they start coming early in the morning.
Now, wait a minute. I was here just a moment ago. I rang the bell.
Then she was lying to me. She said it was somebody from down the hall.
Hey, let go of my coat.
I'll make an example of you, mister.
Nope.
Come on. Come on, get up.
So you can knock me down again?
No, thank you.
Get up, I said, or I'll grind you into the floor.
No, well, wait. Now, look, I don't even know your wife. I just came here to help her get a ring back.
What ring?
The big diamond one that was stolen last night. I've got it right here.
Don't you lie to me. That ring is at the jeweler's. She told me she left it there to have it fixed.
Well, I don't know what she told you, Mr. Stewart, but...
Hey, that's my throat you're squeezing.
Come on, we're going to find out about that ring right now.
Wait a second, will you? My wife's downstairs in the phone booth.
I don't care where your wife is. You're coming with me.
Operator, get me police headquarters right away.
Yes, ma'am. Police headquarters.
Put that phone down.
Huh? Oh, it's you. Oh, dear. It's you.
Put that phone down.
Of course.
Now, hand over the ring.
What ring?
Don't play dumb. I saw the milkman give it to you. I've been following you ever since.
Well, you haven't followed very closely. My husband's got it.
Get it back.
But I can't. He's upstairs in the apartment on Tilden Street, and you're holding me here on Monroe Street.
What are you talking about?
Well, it ought to be plain enough. You're holding me here on Monroe Street, and my husband...
Wait a minute. There goes your husband now, with Mr. Stewart.
Where?
Can't you see through the window? They're crossing the street.
Well, don't you want to find out where they're going?
You bet I do. Come on. Until I get that ring, I'm not going to let either of you out of my sight.
Well, I wish you'd tell me why you're dragging me to a jewelry store, Mrs. Stewart. I've got the ring in my pocket.
Be quiet. The store's right here.
It isn't open yet.
Then we'll wait. There's something awfully fishy about this ring business. And I've got a hunch my wife is behind it.
Why?
Because she doesn't ever tell the truth until I dig it out of her. Only this time I'm going to dig it out of the jeweler.
Hey,
say, what was that?
Sounded like a shot to me. There's another one.
Where are they coming from?
I haven't got the faintest idea. Quick, get down. That one was too close for comfort.
What the heck is going on here?
Don't you know, Mr. Stewart? Somebody's trying to kill us.
Well, it looks like Jerry is going to be kept very busy for a while. I'd like you to try something tomorrow morning or evening. In return, I promise you a small miracle, and that's not a wild promise. I ask you to brush your teeth with the all-purpose tooth powder, Colgate tooth powder. Just that, and here's the reward I promise you. You'll find that brushing your teeth becomes a really pleasant experience. You actually enjoy the rich, active foam of Colgate tooth powder, and you'll certainly like what it does for you. Not only does it get your teeth sparkling clean, looking their brightest, but at the same moment, it cleans and sweetens your breath, too. Indeed it does. That's proved. Colgate tooth powder with its active foam instantly stops unpleasing breath originating in the mouth in 7 out of 10 cases. Look, you can still get all-purpose Colgate tooth powder tonight and try it in the morning. But at any rate, try it as soon as you can. The sooner the better, for you will learn that Colgate tooth powder sweetens your breath while it cleans your teeth.
Those shots are coming from across the street.
Get back in the doorway, Mr. Stewart. You're too big a target. If you are the target...
It's me, all right. My wife's firing those shots. See her over there?
She's coming this way. You better beat it before she gets the range.
Where can I go? She's got us cornered in this doorway.
Well, I'd stand in front of you, but the way she looks, I think she'd shoot through me.
Come on out of there is.
Now, wait a minute, honey. You don't want to kill me.
Keep talking. His voice caught from the other.
I know we had our little spats, but...
Stop shaking, you big bluff. If I hadn't been afraid of you, this would never have happened.
But I don't want you
Dr.
to...
Dr. Goodley, in proper fast.
Mullins.
It's all right, Mr. North. I've got hold of her now.
You got here just in time, officer. She was going to kill me.
Don't be a fool. I was just trying to frighten you away from this store. I didn't want you to speak to the jeweler before I did.
Why not?
Because I lied to you about that ring, Ed. It wasn't being repaired. I pawned it about a month ago, and I didn't want you to know about it. So I had a duplicate made.
And that's the one I've got? The one that was stolen?
Yes, Mr. North. The stones aren't real.
Well, I don't know what you two are talking about, but you're all coming down to headquarters for questioning. I've got a murder to solve.
Well, that's a lucky thing you found us, Mullins. How'd you know we were here?
Well, didn't your missus get a message through to headquarters? Ah, she pulled a fast one, Mr. North. May believe she was hanging on the phone and left it open all the time.
What?
That's how we knew that the other girl was holding her.
What other girl? What are you talking about, Mullins? Where's Pam now?
I don't know, Mr. North, don't you?
No. What's that?
Oh, there she is across the street.
Quick, Mullins. That other girl will kill her.
It's all right, Jerry. I've got the gun now.
Pam, what happened? You're not hurt.
Now, don't get excited, dear. We just had a little argument over the revolver, and I won. Oh, watch her, Mullins.
Here, I got her.
I didn't kill him. I didn't kill him, I tell you.
Oh, but you did. You admitted he was running out on you when you called him a skunk. You had every reason to kill him, and you proved it by refusing to give yourself up to the police when we told you to.
Oh, no, that wasn't it. I was afraid they'd blame me for stealing the ring.
Oh, but you didn't have the ring, so you couldn't have stolen it. You see, the only thing you had to hide from the police was murder.
Get in.
Awfully nice of you to take us home, driver. You sure you don't mind?
Oh, it's a pleasure, Mrs. North. I wish I could take you home every morning. Without a murder, of course.
Oh, aren't you sweet? You really mean that?
Sure do. Why, if I could make my milk route with you, I'd leave an extra bottle of heavy cream at every doorstep.
Aw, I think you're pretty swell, too.
Say, what is this? A mutual admiration society?
Why, Jerry North, you're not jealous, are you? I think it's fun coming home with a milkman.
So do I, as long as the milkman doesn't come home with us.
Remember, every Tuesday night at the same time, the Colgate-Palmolive Peat Company, makers of Halo Shampoo and Colgate Tooth Powder, bring you Mr. and Mrs. North, starring Joseph Curtin and Alice Frost. The characters are based on those originally created by Francis and Richard Lockridge. Original music is composed and conducted by Charles Paul. The program is produced and directed by John Lufton.
A soap with a fragrance that's delightful and gay is one that is known as Cashmere Bouquet. Like magical gardens with blue skies above, so enchanting and trancing, the fragrance men love. It's thrilling to bathe each day with Cashmere Bouquet. No other soap gives your skin this exciting bouquet.
Next Tuesday night, Mr. and Mrs. North find a lawyer, namely to wit as follows herein, murdered, and a murdered man asking for their help. Charles Stark speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Personal notice, danger's my stock and trade. If the job's too tough for you to handle, you got a job for me, George Valentine. Write full details.
You've all heard of the man behind the plow, or of the man behind the gun. But have you ever heard of the man behind the frame? Well, if you haven't, you are right now. Because that's the title of our Let George Do It adventure. Now, one does not have to have a high IQ to figure out that the man behind the frame is not some small character who keeps that picture of Uncle Egbert hanging up over the fireplace. On the contrary, he's the kind of schmo who likes to have others fight his battles for him. And George Valentine is a fellow who is always ready to put on the gloves, with or without horseshoes. Now, it all started with a bunch of the boys getting together for a little ad-lib sing-fest, which is a pretty sour way to start anything.
It's the best office machinery.
Hold it, you guys. Shut up. Shut up, will ya? I'm trying to talk on the telephone. How can I... Ah, that's better. Bunch of crazy banshees.
Hello. Yes. Yes, now I can hear ya. Lawrence Ferguson? The kid? Well, sure he works for me. Came down from Emmitsville with me just yesterday. What'd he do? Get high on too much soda pop? Oh, look, friend, whoever you are, I'm no nursemaid. Don't bother me with any of this. Shut up, you guys. He what? When? Where did he... Look, Lieutenant, for gosh sakes, tell me. All right, of course. County jail. I got it. Dear Mr. Valentine, my name's Vic Burnett, Federal Office Equipment Company. You remember, the guy sold you the wire recorder for your office. Well, I'll cancel out the last three payments on it if you come down fast to the county jail. I need help. A crazy rube I brought into town for a convention just so he could see the sights is now staring at the inside of a cell. He's been locked up for murder.
I think that this Mr. Burnett should have coached this young hothead on how to act before he brought him to town. You just don't go around killing people, any more than you turn a deaf ear to this. Now let's see if George has gotten into the act yet. Oh, yes. I see he and Brooksy have just walked into Lieutenant Johnson's office.
Okay, Mr. Burnett,
but
okay.
I feel responsible for him. He's never been down here before. He's not even a salesman. You see, up in Emmitsville,
you
I
want
have
to see
this...
him, Valentine, or don't
just
you?
Just a minute, Lieutenant Johnson.
He's never done anything but read comic books, but I can't let him get railroaded like a common...
Well, I'm sure he's not being railroaded for anything, and a woman is dead, isn't she?
Miss Brooks, listen to me. This kid
That's
is absolutely...
That's a good idea. You listen to him, Brooksy. Come on, Johnson.
Gladly.
Valentine, wait a minute.
I just want to hear it from the kid himself, that's all.
What a job. My poor boy's in the hands of the law.
Oh, well, that guy's just trying to help.
I'm an old man. Guys like Burnett helped me get that way.
What's eating you?
You'll see. Here, through here.
A woman was murdered, huh? Take it from there.
Hotel apartment where she lived. Name was Sally Fife. High-speed typist. Typist.
Yeah, where'd he meet her? What happened?
You'll see.
Oh, look, Johnson.
Blow
you...
on the side of the head with a bottle.
Oh. Little party?
Little gal, about 35, fast talker, neat, clean, small business of her own that didn't amount to anything. Fight, sure, a fight of some kind. What else? This is a very refreshing original story.
Why was the kid picked up? Were there witnesses?
He was caught trying to run down a fire escape this morning. Taking us all day to even pry his name out of him.
Well, I don't see...
He's 26. What? Skinny, sandy-haired, pimply-faced 26, and probably never earned more than 26 a week in his life either. You see for yourself. Hey, wake up. Ferguson.
Oh, excuse me. Hello, sir. Sure.
I don't stand up. Just thought you were asleep.
No, sir, I can't sleep. I just shut my eyes like that. I do it in the office sometimes so people don't know I'm thinking.
Okay, I'm not sir. This is Mr. Valentine.
Sure. How do you do, sir? Whatever you say.
Yeah, hello. Sit down, Lawrence.
Yeah. You want to hear it, too, I guess. I don't feel very good, you know.
Last night you had some drinks.
Yeah. See, Mr. Valentine, I'm just a clerk in the office. Up in Emmitsville, I mean. Been there 9 years.
Uh-huh.
I've begged so many times to come to conventions of boss, it's Mr. Burnett. He found...
Last night you went to a movie and after that a bar called the Silver Duck and you had some drinks.
There was a banquet on the schedule, but of course, I'm not a regular salesman. I mean, just a clerk, you know. But I do handle the boss's correspondence and the district records and things. Well, I was alone last night. I don't know anybody in the city or anything.
You knew this woman, didn't you? This Sally Fife?
No.
What?
No, I didn't. Not until then. In the bar, I mean.
He met her there. Very refreshing. It's true, too.
Go on.
Well, I had several, I guess. You know how it is when a guy's alone. On the town, so to speak. I don't remember very well, but I guess I met her. She was awful nice. Anyway, sometime later, I didn't feel very well.
Yeah, sure.
It was a long way back to the hotel, and she said she'd make me some coffee up at her place close by. But she was nice. I don't want you guys thinking anything.
Yeah. We know all about it. Tell them what happened when you got there.
I've told you. I don't know. It's not clear. I'm not used to... I mean... I don't know whether I drank the coffee or not. All I know is that it's daylight and I'm asleep on the sofa.
All right, hold it, kid, hold it. There was a fight, wasn't there? You had trouble with this girl and then...
Oh, stop it. Leave me alone. All right, I ran, sure. I ran. I tried to get out the fire escape, only my head was all dizzy. I would have got away if it hadn't been for that.
That's this morning when they caught you. Get back to last night.
Well... there she was. Dad, what do you think? I killed her.
Oh, you did. Well, tell me about it.
Refreshing, original story.
I don't know. Tell you what. I wanted to have excitement, what it feels like to be kicked around and yelled at by all them salesmen. A clerk, sure. He'll never get any place. Well, they're all fakes, all of them. Loud-mouthed jerks I could wrap around my finger any time you ask. Salesman. I'm better than any of them.
Cut it out, kid. Now, easy. You said you killed a woman.
I must have, don't you see? Nobody else was up there, I remember. I'm sorry I shoot my mouth off, but I'm just trying to forget. I wish I was just being a clerk now.
Remember, forget. It was her idea you have some coffee last night, I suppose.
Well, it seems that way. It wasn't mine. How did you know?
Oh, for the love of... Kid, haven't you ever heard of a thing like this happening to anybody besides you?
What? Well, nobody ever got in trouble like this before. Nobody ever did the things that I must...
Oh, cut it out, Rube. I can't stand it, eh? Yeah, the facts are all true, Valentine. The ones we could check. Same old story.
What are you talking about? I'm just a guy who...
Hasn't it ever occurred to you you might be a sucker?
Oh, never mind, Johnson. Never mind. What's he held for? He signed a confession of anything?
You think I take milk away from babies? Suspicion, that's all.
Then how about taking him out of here? What's the name of that bar you said, the Silver Duck? Come on, Lawrence. I want to see if you know how to swim.
What's the idea, Mr. Valentine? This is where I was, all right.
Relax,
but
relax. Nobody's noticing the handcuff.
Yeah, but just to stand here all the time.
Keep watching. Neighborhood place, same people every night. It's about the same time now, too.
The girl, Valentine. That's the part of it that doesn't fit. She wasn't the type. Wasn't a regular customer.
Yeah, Johnson, it does.
I'm just all mixed up. I want to go back
Lawrence,
to
Lawrence, on your first night in the big city, how did you meet this Sally Fife? How about a demonstration? I want to see how a boy from the stick strikes up a conversation with a strange woman.
Well, I know my way around. I don't know.
She said hello to him. What do you think? He probably blushed, too.
Johnson, you contradict yourself. You said she wasn't quite the type. Brisk, sharp lady with a job.
There's one. That guy.
Huh? Which one? Point him out.
There with a cigar. Just came in. Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure. I must have seen all the people over here last night. I remember the waiters.
Excuse me.
Valentine,
Lieutenant, wake up. What's the most likely way the kid here met Sally Fife? Got picked for a patsy or whatever it was. Somebody probably introduced him, don't you think? So I'll see you later. Hello, friend.
Hmm?
Oh, excuse me.
Just wondered if I could borrow your newspaper a minute. Hey, what kind of a cigar is that?
Here's your change, Loopy. 15, 20, 25.
Okay, Jake, I'll see you.
Wait a minute, friend.
The newspaper? Help yourself. See you later, Jake.
And sit still. What are you picking the fifth? Must have hit it nice, them fancy cigars, paying off your debt.
I still got to figure Hialeah. Hey, let go of my arm, man.
I want to ask the bartender, Jake, here about you.
What do you want?
He's all right, mister.
Sit down, sit down. Name's Loopy, huh?
What do you want?
Turn around. That skinny young guy standing over there. Ever see him before? One next to the heavyset man?
No. Hey, Jake, what do you let snoops like this in for?
Loopy's all right, mister.
Loopy, you haven't been doping the races at Hialeah. Papers turned to the front page. News about a murder. And that kid's picture. So at least you've seen it before in the paper, haven't you?
I didn't notice. Hey, what do you want? Here, Jake, here's my selections, all of them. I'm getting out of this.
Sure, Loopy.
Give me that.
Hey, look out. Get your hands off
I got him, so cool off. That other guy coming is a cop.
I got nothing to be afraid of.
Oh, no. Just wanted to get rid of these notes in your pocket. Only they're not all racing selections either, are they, Loopy? Pawn ticket, huh?
Mister, I told you, Loopy here's all right.
What's going on, Valentine?
I don't know, Johnson. Pawn ticket for $1,000.
What?
Yeah. No wonder he pays his debts today, smokes such fancy cigars.
Now, look, Golly, I ain't got nothing to hide. I just been wondering what to do about it, that's all. I'm Loopy Fife.
Huh?
Fife, did you say?
Sure. This Damer got killed, Well, I've been wondering if I should volunteer as expert testimony or something. I mean, she's my wife. Rhymes. Sally Fife, she's my wife.
Well, how do you like... Come on, friend, we're going to have a little talk.
Now, let go of me. Take it easy. I ain't done nothing.
Oh, no. Just hawked a mink coat for $1,000. Well, that's what it says here on the pawn ticket. One mink coat.
Oh, here's no doubt. Well, it's a cold
night. All right, so what? So I did so what? Sure, it's here, but I've done it before. She don't mind. I always get a winner the next day. Brings me luck, that's all. Raise a little quick cash. She don't mind.
If you're talking about your wife, what do you mean? That she's too dead now to mind?
Cut it out, I said. She and me were just friends, God rest her soul. So stop looking at me that way. I didn't kill her, we're divorced. Ain't it so, Jake? It's what you call platonic, that's all. Picking the guy who gave her the mink, not me. Sure, go up to Emmettsville. Big shot salesman, he's the one. Vic Burnett. Yeah, ask Vic Burnett.
What do you know? Mr. Burnett goes around giving out mink coats to little married girls. You know, somehow he didn't impress me as being that generous. Anyway, while George Valentine is working that tip over, let's you and I work this one over.
Now, back to George Valentine. Vic Burnett, the big man from Emmettsville, here in town for a convention. He wanted you to help one of his employees, the young clerk, Lawrence Ferguson, because Lawrence was locked up in jail for murder, too confused even to defend himself. The only trouble is, though, the girl Lawrence said that he met for the first time last night, the night of her murder, now seems to have been mixed up with Vic Burnett himself. So, if your name is George Valentine, you're pretty much inclined to agree with Claire Brooks when she says...
I never did like his looks, George, from the day he sold us this wire machine. I didn't like the kind of stories he told.
Oh, sure, Brooksy, but don't break the recorder on account of him. You get the rest of my notes on it?
Oh, didn't you finish? I'll hook it up on the phone again.
No, that's all. Burnett didn't tell you where he was going after he left the county jail, did he?
No.
Huh. How do you like that? Write up your notes for a client that doesn't even... Well, we can't find him either, Brooksy. Salesman must have sold himself a powder and then taken it.
Mr. Valentine, now you're just getting my boss in trouble. He wouldn't have done a thing like that.
Kid, you want to save your job or your neck?
I don't know. I'm all confused. I don't feel very good. This place just reminds me...
Lawrence, we brought you here to her apartment to see what else you could remember.
Well, I'm not helping any. I know I'm not helping any, but... If you just leave him out of it...
Burnett's in this up to his ears. Now, for the last time, relax. Forget what a sucker you've been and think.
I'm trying, Lieutenant. That's the couch I woke up on. I know that.
Wash the glasses.
Did you?
No, I don't think so.
Must have been drugged.
Clean glasses. But liquor stains on the table and floor.
I came up here to have a cup of coffee, I know, but...
Kid, that husband, Loopy. You saw him in the bar when you met her. Didn't you see him up here, too, later on? Sure you did, didn't you?
I didn't see anybody here except her.
Oh, for the love... Okay, Rube, wait for us here. And by the way, there's a sergeant outside the other door.
Well, going to get around to me now, huh?
Just wanted to give you time to make your story good, Loopy.
I know you guys think if you keep me cool and I'll get hotter, hey? Well, let me tell you, I'm just a husband, see? But we're divorced.
I'm not surprised. She was a businesswoman. Little sharp around the edges, maybe, but standing a guy like you as a horse of another color.
Incompatible, that's all. Just one of them things. Give the little lady her happiness, I said, but still platonic. Soft spot for old Loopy. You know how it is. Which brings me to the mink coke. A little matter which was over and done with yesterday afternoon. A little loan of the mink, so Loopy could pick the horse of the right color, if you don't mind my lifting your figures of speech. Just saw her for a minute in that bar, but I never came up here later on.
Vic Burnett gave her the coat, huh?
Yes, sir, but you see...
When?
Last year.
How long's he known her?
Several years, maybe.
Fancy apartment. Her typing service didn't buy her all this.
It's how she met him. Special work on his district records or something. He's down here a lot. And she used to write to his office when he wasn't. Boyfriend, that's all. It's perfectly legal.
In love with business.
And he paid her in mink.
All right, so she knew a few things about him. So she had a liking for the finer things.
Now you're warming up, friend. She blackmailed him, huh?
She did not. You can't talk that way about my wife, God rest her soul.
A shakedown artist, so that's what you are.
I didn't say that.
Oh, stop it.
Huh?
Well, look what's here.
You see, I wasn't running any place.
Just dodging a little. I know, Mr. Burnett.
I guess you don't need me anymore, so I guess I'll just...
No, you don't, Luby. Stick around.
Okay.
Listen to me. I want you guys to understand something. I hired you, Valentine. Don't forget that.
Yeah, to rescue a guy so dumb he walked into the oldest frame-up in history. So old, no matter what he said, no jury would ever convict him. But that doesn't mean you couldn't be the man behind the frame, does it?
Sure, he must be.
Listen, I said, I would have told you everything, but you know how it is.
When did you see her the last time?
Last night, supper. Go on, make something out of that.
There you see, supper. He saw her at supper.
How was she dressed?
Huh? Well, I don't remember very nicely.
Was she wearing a mink coat at supper, or wasn't she?
Sure. The one I gave her. Why?
Grab that guy.
Lloyd.
Oh, no, you don't. I'm no sergeant.
Grab him, sergeant. Grab him. He's the one. He did it. Get him.
He got away, George?
Oh, yeah, sure. Of course he got away, Brooksy. Johnson and Burnett after him like a couple of overfed bloodhounds. The kid's here with me.
Oh, well, why didn't you go with...
Wanted you to read me back some notes, that's all. You see, the closet's been all torn up, ransacked. So it had to be Loopy who got the coat, we know that. But he didn't get it until after supper. So he was up here late, probably after he'd been in that bar.
George, he saw his wife with Lawrence, so it would have been easy for him to follow them up there and...
Yeah, sure, it was...
George?
Yeah, I'm right here. I'll be back up to listen to those notes myself instead, okay?
Well, I'm just typing.
Yeah, I'll be up at the office. Let Johnson look for people. I'm all through. Wait for me. Notes for Burnett. Interviewed Lawrence Ferguson in jail. Has stack of circumstantial evidence against him, including the fact that he was caught running
George,
the scene of crime.
I'm just getting started.
The only trouble is...
Oh.
Hello, ma'am. I heard that voice and thought it was Mr. Valentine.
Oh, I thought you were. You're Lawrence Ferguson, aren't you?
Yeah, that's right. You mind if I sit down to wait for him? How'd you know?
Hmm? No, sit down. He described you, I guess.
Oh? I was all dressed up last night. I don't look like much anymore.
Oh, don't be silly. I thought George was with you.
I can't afford to buy the kind of clothes a salesman do. They're jerks. You know that?
Where is George?
Oh, I don't know. He was on the phone. I was waiting for him. Then he hung up and took off like lightning. Thought maybe you'd come over here. Go on with your work. I'll just sit here and wait.
Well, thank you.
Only trouble is, matter of a mink coat. Loopy, Sally Fife's divorced no good husband hostage for
Mr. Valentine didn't know yet, I guess. Loopy got the coat last
Only
night. That's what
there
made...
is, with a man who committed murder, maybe even with a coat as motive, hock it. Seems to me he'd be a lot more likely to sell it.
Mr. Valentine's a smart man, isn't he?
At the time Loopy hocked the coat, today, he didn't even know his wife was dead.
I'm sort of like Mr. Valentine in some ways. Smart.
Where is George? Tell me. If he left to come here and you were with him, he'd be here by now.
I don't know. I'm waiting. Just like you are.
Yeah. He said the closet at Sally's apartment was all ransacked. Loopy wouldn't do that, would he? He'd know where the coat was.
Maybe he already got it.
You mean while you were in that bar with his wife?
Maybe. She wasn't wearing it.
How did you know she even had a mink coat?
I don't know, ma'am. I'm all mixed up.
Yes.
Play some more. That machine, the salesman sell. Big shots, the jerks. They even got a song. Salesman of all FOE, we will have prosperity. Isn't that a laugh? Like a bunch of high school kids at a football game. I see what goes on. I can make more money than any of them.
Lawrence, stop. Stop. I'll play it if you want.
Sell it. Also, Mr. Burnett, it bothers me you'd hire me and still keep things secret. But you did hire me, so answer a few questions. Your correspondence up there in Emmitsville, Sally Fife did business with you, so whoever handles your correspondence would know about her. Check? And that's your clerk, Lawrence. He would have known about her through the handling of district records, too. But he insists he didn't even know her name until last night. Why?
You killed her. The poor innocent boy being framed. You killed her.
Mr. Valentine's smart.
You're stupid. You killed her and ran, but you got caught.
Don't say that! That's what she said.
I'm sorry.
They were sorry for me. They thought I'd been framed because I made it look that way. I spilled liquor on the rug and the table. I pretended. I used to give Sally information about Mr. Burnett. And then she'd get mink coats and things.
I don't care. I don't want to know.
She wouldn't give me my share. She said I was stupid, the same thing you said.
Don't touch me.
Why not? I have to kill you.
Get away.
Sally couldn't give me my share. But I got even with her. And even if they caught me, I still made it look like I'd been framed. I looked for the coat, but it was gone.
Get away, I said.
But he still got away.
Stop it.
You
Lawrence,
Mr. Valentine,
stop it.
I wasn't concealed. I wasn't framed.
They were sorry for me. They thought I'd been framed because I made it look that way. I spilled liquor on the rug and the table. I pretended. I used to give Sally information about Mr.
You
Burnett.
Did that.
She'd get me coats and things.
Listen.
Here,
I don't want to know.
You turned that thing to try to record what I said.
You said I was stupid. The same thing you
said. You think you've got a confession, don't you? Where's the button on this crazy thing?
I didn't know. No, I didn't. You bumped it yourself.
I know what kind of a proof I am.
And so, Mr. Burnett, I guess you don't need a report. The kid you wanted me to help is nothing but a pin-brained loony.
Where's the button? Turn it off at once.
Oh, yes, it will, Buster.
Oh, George, you're here.
I'll show you the button.
Phew. Boy, that was a close call for Brooksy. I wasn't sure there for a minute whether or not George was going to make it in time. Now, while he's quieting Brooksy down, let's take a minute to listen to this.
George.
Oh, now, hey, Angel, cut it out. It's all over. He didn't hurt you.
But I didn't know where you were. I thought he'd done something to you.
Well, back when I was telephoning, he was outside with a cop.
He slugged him and ran. But I told you I was coming right over.
George, why didn't you say what had happened? Why didn't
you... Look, now take it easy, Angel. I didn't want to scare you. I wasn't positive he was headed here, and besides, I came as fast as I could.
But you must have got here a long time ago. You must have been standing outside and listening.
Angel, it's all over, I said.
I know you needed real evidence against him, Ollie.
I wouldn't have let him hurt you, Angel. Come on, let's go.
You didn't do that on purpose, did you? I mean, not warn me and then let
that... Brooksy, what kind of a guy do you think... Well, it just happened that way. Oh, look, darling, come here. Yeah. That convince you?
No. I don't believe you.
Oh,
but don't stop trying to convince me. If at first you don't succeed.
You have just heard The Man Behind the Frame, another Let George Do It adventure. Robert Bailey was starred as George Valentine, with Virginia Gregg as Brooksy. David Victor and Jackson Gillis wrote the story, with music by Eddie Dunstetter. Now this is yours truly inviting you to another visit with Valentine, when you will again hear what happens when you let George do it.
You knew the job was dangerous when you took it.
Radio production.